Hello everyone, my name is Bill, and I am presenting on behalf of Uncountable. So I know last day of the conference, I want to make this a bit more fun, a bit more interactive. So please have a seat, and then if you could just humor me for a little bit, I would like to have you close your eyes for about 10 seconds. Don't worry, I'm not going to go around and steal your wallet. Just close your eyes, trust me on this. All right, now, if you're with me, I'll take you back to 1,000 years ago. And imagine you're an alchemist, and you're in this cold stone room, and there's candle burning on the side, right? Try to imagine you're spelling the candle right now. And your mission is simple. You want to turn lead into gold. Now, before you run your experiment, you want to learn from what's already been done, right? So you go around searching for the notes left behind by the last alchemist. You open up a wooden chest, and you find these rolled up scrolls, and you pull up these paper covered in symbols, and some pages are stained with wax, and others are smudged. Now, these formulas are written in shorthand. These ingredients have different names depending on who wrote them, right? The measurements are recorded in different units, some in milligrams, some in grams, and some in whatever felt right that day. Now, you might find half a procedure, but the critical step is missing. You find a result, but there's no condition. You find a conclusion, but there's no data. So you spend hours, or maybe even days, trying to reconstruct what just happened. And even then, you don't really trust what you're reading. Now you can open your eyes. Thank you so much, guys. You might feel like this guy, a little bit frustrated, or a bit more frustrated like this guy here. But now fast forward to today. I work with R&D and QAQC teams across different industries. And when we look at how they are recording their lab data, I see something very similar, right? They have spreadsheets, instrument exports, different naming conventions, different formats. And a lot of these talented scientists are doing archaeology, right? Not because they lack AI, but because their systems were never designed to think. And the difference is today, the pressure is exponentially high. And I want to be very clear about something today, that the system that we built nowadays, right, the spreadsheets, the notebooks, the process, they created the materials that power the world today, right? The coatings on these aircraft, the cells in batteries, the membrane that filtered water, right? They worked. But today, we're asked to innovate faster, reduce cost, meet the sustainability targets, and also respond to supply chain volatility. And also add AI on top of everything. So we can't really expect the same infrastructure that has got us to today to have different outcomes for the future. So today isn't really telling you about AI, but it's more about answering the harder question of why does AI work in some labs and fail in others? And we'll start by really looking at how labs operate today, then talk about why AI often disappoints, and then I'll give you a 30-second rule to understand, is your lab really ready for AI? And finally, I'll show you what happens when learning starts to compound and what we envision for the future of R&D and QAQC. Before we go a bit deeper, let me explain why we have a strong point of view on this. At Uncountable, we work with R&D and QAQC teams across industries. You might see coatings, buildings materials, specialty chemicals, and all of that. These are large global enterprises. These are mid-sized innovators in very highly regulated environments. And across more than 150 organizations, one pattern keeps repeating, right? You have different products, different chemistries, different geographies. But you also have the same underlying data problem. And what I'm sharing here today isn't theoretical. It's something that we've seen play out again and again. And what we've learned from this is that AI initiatives fail not because the models are weak, but because the foundation isn't ready. Now, what we're looking at here is a very high-level representation of the product development cycle. So what this represents is you might have your raw materials, it may be some sort of ERP system, maybe SAP, and then you have your formulations in different spreadsheets, and then you might keep your processing information, any formula property in other places, right? Maybe even analytical data in LIMS system. And then what we're trying to do is at the end, combine all of these data together, clean them, and then put it in some sort of data analytical software. And you'll end up with something at the bottom of the screen where you have a lot of different file formats in a lot of different places. And as a result, teams are doing a lot of rework because that directly translates to the loss of time and resources. And teams are doing a lot of guesswork because they don't have the full context of how to make a decision. Now, when the systems don't talk to each other, the scientists are the integration layer then, because they need to copy, they need to paste to different places, and they really need to hunt for these old results. And we consistently see that the scientists spend a huge portion of their time just managing, searching, and cleaning data in their organization. And the majority of the time is not analysis, it's actually just manual data cleanup. And that's just the visible cost. The invisible cost is that when data is very painful to reuse, people stop reusing it. And so if we take a step back, these are just the symptoms. The real goal is not really AI. The real goal is not collecting more data. The real goal is increasing the lifetime value of every experiment through reuse. So if you ask a scientist today how often they use the data collected a year ago, and if they say, hey, every single day or every other week, you're in great shape. But many scientists will say that they never use the data collected a year ago, or that it only exists for compliance purposes. Now, there's an analogy in software around the lifetime value of a user, right? How often they open up Facebook, how long they use it for. And we think about the lifetime value of a data point. So if a scientist spent 3 hours looking or running an experiment, that's a real cost to the organization. The question is, how do we maximize the return on investment of that experiment? And the trick is expanding the time horizon. Right? There's very limited value of the experiment today or tomorrow, but then if we expand that timeline to 10 years, or if that experiment benefited 10 other colleagues, you've multiplied the ROI of that original experiment. And you might be thinking, how do we actually increase the lifetime value, right? How do we make an experiment reusable? It turns out it's not a motivational problem, right? It's underlying structural property of how data is captured. And in most organizations, data lives in two worlds. You have the world of unstructured data and the world of structured data. So let me start with something important. So unstructured data is not bad, right? It's the default for science. And unstructured data is anything that doesn't have any constraint, right? It could be a spreadsheet, it could be a notebook entry, a PDF report, a Word document. And it's the scientist really saying, here's what I saw, here's what I tried, and here's what I think happened. And the advantage is very obvious. It's very fast, it feels very natural, and it captures a lot of creativity. But here's the trade-off. Unstructured data is very easy to write, but very hard to reuse. Because reuse requires comparison, and comparison requires consistency. Right? Let me give you a really simple example. Let's say I'm measuring viscosity. Right? If one person writes Brookfield viscosity, that's great. Another person might write BF visc, or another person even writes visc at RT, or room temperature. Right? And to a human, that's all the same thing. But to your organization or to a computer, that's three different measurements. And thank you. And now we multiply that across 10 labs, 10 years, and thousands of experiments. And now that's why a lot of data becomes compliance data. It exists, but it doesn't compound. Now, structured data is the opposite. It captures in a very consistent shape. And so you can search for it, filter it, compare it, and connect the inputs with the output and build on it. And advantage is huge, right? Because you can ask questions like, what ingredients changes viscosity across all of my projects? And what processing conditions drives failure rate? What formulations meets constraint at the lowest cost? But there's also downsides. if structured data feels rigid, people won't use it. And if you want to use it, it doesn't matter how good the database is. So the real challenge in modern data management tools is not choosing a side, right? It's getting the benefits of unstructured creativity while also capturing the core data in a structured way that can be reused. Now, once you understand the trade-off, you can predict whether AI will succeed in your lab before you even spend a dollar on it. And now you might be thinking, how do I know which world I'm actually operating in, right? The structured or the unstructured world? Now, here's a quick test. If the structured data enables reuse, then reuse should be easy to see. So if I ask your team to create a scatter plot of ingredient X versus property Y across all of your labs for the past 5 years, how long would that take, right? Would it take 5 minutes or 5 emails back and forth? And if that takes a long time or requires exporting from 3 different systems or involving cleaning data, AI is probably not the first step. Because AI doesn't start with modeling. It starts with visibility. If you can't see your data clearly, you can't teach a model anything that's useful. And if AI isn't your first step, you might be thinking, what is? It starts with actually change management. First, structure before sophistication. If you have your 80% of data captured in a structured way that are harmonized, connected, it's better than having all of your data captured in disconnected formats. That way you don't have to have people going around to different places to find the different data and record it in different formats. And second, you want to have a one shared source of truth. If each group defines reality differently, learning cannot compound, right? And when everyone builds on the same database, it's a great way to retain historical data, and you don't run into the issue of, hey, my senior scientist is retiring, and all of that knowledge that they gathered for the past 30 years will walk out of the door with them. And third, change behavior, not just tools. And this is where most initiatives fail. Not because the software is bad, but because workflows don't really change. We needed to get scientists to be really excited about these tools that you're implementing, and also from the top management to really back these initiatives forward. And once that foundation is in place, AI stops being a demo, it becomes the foundation. So this is what happens when you could have these systems in your place, right? Suppose I'm working on a formulation and say I'm trying to reduce chalking. Traditionally, what happens is you open up maybe supplier websites, you search for technical data sheets, you maybe ask someone, hey, have we done something like this in the past? So you end up with a lot of different tabs in different places. Now imagine instead, inside your formulation workflow, you can simply ask, what are some good alternatives to Cornell's 2220 to reduce chalking? Now the systems puts together relevant information of what the ingredient is, what it is known for, and what's the comparable option that exists. So instead of a bunch of different tabs, you now get a short list of candidates with structured context. Now, could you do something similar in Google or ChatGPT? 100%. And the difference is that this is embedded within the workflow of where the work actually happens. So the output isn't just information, it's a reusable starting point in all in one place. And over time, the real opportunity is combining external knowledge with what your organization has already learned, right? Find out what this is comparably, but also given the context under your constraints, your previous outcomes, and other information relevant to your organization. And this is just the beginning. The real value of the system shouldn't be just to help you find answers, but also decide what to do next. So this is where things get interesting. Once your data is structured and reusable, you can move from searching to optimizing. Because now the system can connect three things that normally live in 3 different places, your constraints, your formulation, and your performance targets all together. And in real R&D, we never optimize in a vacuum. We have constraints, right? Regulatory, cost, supply chain, and approved material list. And you might be thinking, right, we have ingredients we can or cannot use. We have different output goals, right? Viscosity, adhesion, weathering, whatever matters. Now the question becomes, given all of these constraints, what experiment should we run that maximizes learning? Now what you're seeing here is not the AI replacing the scientist. It's the AI doing the boring part of navigating this huge combinatorial space and then telling you, hey, these are some high quality starting points that you should go off. And notice these are just suggestions, right? These are guidelines that the scientists still need to decide what makes sense. But instead of starting from scratch, you're starting with a short list of options that already respects these constraints. Now, this is how experiment starts paying rent, because every experiment you run improves the ability to suggest the next one for the system. Now, 10 years ago, we didn't start with AI, but we built a deeper assumption that every experiment should teach the next one. Now, sounds great in theory. The real question is, does this actually work in a very complex, real global organization? And here's an example of Cooper Standard. They build ceilings and fluid systems for automotive companies around the world. They have about 80 chemists, multiple regions. They have a lot of institutional knowledge. Now, the data looked very similar to the Frankenstein that we discussed earlier, right? They have different naming conventions. They run duplicate experiments. They find it very hard to trace information experiments they've run. Now, a lot of these scientists are stitching these data together, finding them in different places. And they had a global system before. They had very heavy rollout, but people didn't want to adopt them. And they're thinking, how do we prevent people from going back to Excel? So the goal wasn't to add AI on top of everything. The goal was simple. Have one shared memory, have one shared source of truth. And within 6 weeks, they had live environment connecting materials, recipes, and experiments history across different regions. And then chemists were able to get back a lot of hours within their week. And one story that we always hear is one of the chemists who's been formulating for rubber for past 25 years, they said, they looked at our suggested formulation and said, hey, we actually never thought about this before. And it wasn't some magic or any breakthrough mathematical equation. It was just simply thinking outside the way that they typically thought about. And that's the example of augmentation, right? Expanding the scientist's thinking without replacing it. And this is what happens when experiments start paying rent. So Cooper Standard isn't unique. We have a larger organization called Sika, right? They are in buildings materials across 50 plus countries, multiple R&D facilities. And at that scale, alignment and transparency are not optional. And this is where structured memory really enables at a global scale. And once data becomes a memory, AI can finally have something to stand on. Now, last slide here. At the beginning of the talk, we talked about the alchemist. 100 years ago, they were searching for gold without understanding the structure beneath that matter. In many ways, a lot of the R&D labs that we'll look at today is not that different. We have been experimenting, collecting a lot of data, storing it, but not always compounding and learning from our previous work. We build systems that are alive, but not really designed to think. And when we ask AI to fix it, well, it doesn't really create intelligence, but really amplify the structure. Now, the future of R&D, we think, it's not replacing the scientist, but it's about removing the friction between question and insight. It's about every experiment increasing the lifetime value of the ones that came before it. And it's not about the scatter plot being the test anymore, but the baseline of every lab that they can do instantly. And in that future, experiment doesn't disappear into PDFs, right? They become part of a growing connected memory. And formulation doesn't have to feel like shooting in the dark. It feels like navigating with a map. And we're very honored to work with a lot of organizations who aren't just adopting AI, but also redesigning R&D so learning compounds. And we think that teams who win are organizations not with the most data, but with the ones whose data learn from each other. And we hope that at the end of the day, innovation shouldn't feel like digging through dusty archives, but it should feel like unlocking gold. With that, I will conclude the presentation here today. And if any part of that resonated with you, I'm happy to connect and then share the slides with you if you want to connect me on LinkedIn on the left. But if you want to see what our platform actually does or how it performs, happy to schedule a demo to show you in practice if you scan the QR code on the right-hand side. But with that, I'm happy to take questions. Thank you. Any questions? Going once, going twice. Okay, no worries. Feel free to connect me, and I'm happy to send the slides over and answer any questions individually. I'll be around in this area. Thank you.